Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Sander Lanch podcast. Today, we're going to be discussing The Way of Kings, chapters 48 through 51, and then interludes 7 and 8. So we're finishing up part 3, then the first two of the three interludes, wherein Cabsol and Shallan's relationship doesn't work out, and then Kaladin starts to train his men to fight. Then Shallan and Yasna's relationship doesn't work out. And then Kaladin and Amaram's relationship doesn't work out. I'm Data, and with me today is...
Joe.
Jamie.
And Dak.
So hang on to something, everybody. The Sander Lanch is about to begin. So yeah, bunch of chapters this time. Four chapters, two interludes. What did you guys think of the end of part three?
I gotta say, we were right about Cabsol. He's a jerk. And then, yeah, I was not expecting Yasna to find out about Shallan in this way. So it kind of threw me for a big loop here. I'm unsure about what is going to happen in the future, because like what I expected to happen definitely did not, as far as Yasna and Shallan. I mean, it still has time. She still has time to, I guess, forgive her. But it seems like Yasna is also, like, personally, emotionally hurt, if I'm reading the subtext correctly. So I don't know how that's going to work. So, yeah, we've got that. Kaladin, perfectly justified, I think, in feeling the way about Light Eyes that he does. You know, we weren't for sure why he felt that way. Now we're pretty sure. Look, he should have just taken the blade. And the armor, like,
in hindsight, yeah,
so many things could have been avoided for him if he'd had just done that. So anyway, that's unfortunate. So we've got that, and I don't know who these people in the interludes are. I'm not sure what's going on with that, but I'm looking forward to the next interlude, because at least we know who the person is. But I mean, I'm excited for the rest of this book. I would hope that this trend of kind of action and events unfolding and backstory explained, I hope that'll set up for kind of the falling action of the climax and then falling action of this book. Because, like, you know, we're almost all the way through, you know, we're more than 60%, 66%, more than 2/3 of the way through, but we haven't hit a climax yet. So I'm ready to get to that point.
Aren't we all ready to get to that point? Probably. I don't know. I can't speak for everybody. Never mind.
I was about to say, I don't know. Are we? I mean, I am.
Yeah, I like what you were saying about Cabsol, because you're like, we're right about Cabsol. And I thought you were going to be like, he really is a jam addict. Did you see him, like, slurping up that rotten jam?
Yeah.
It's really not so bad.
Yeah, I guess that's a good point. He really needed that jam, but for a different reason.
Yeah. But I was interested how you were going to react, because you had some pretty solid ideas about where you thought the Yasna and Shallan thing was going, and now it seems to have taken a bit of a left turn. You're right, there's time for some forgiveness or something, but not that much time at this point. We've got we've got part four, which spoiler, the people are Dalinar, Kaladin, Adolin, and Navani coming up. So we're not going back to Shallan anytime soon.
Who's Navani again? Is that
that's Elikar's mom, who
interesting.
Dalinar's ex married his brother.
Yeah. Hot. No, yeah, that should be interesting that she's a whole perspective and a part. That should be is she like this, I guess I can't know, but like, is she like the Cersei of the piece, or is like she actually pretty cool, or I'm wondering.
I mean, you guys had some theories about her being a little bit shady the couple times we've seen her, because she's kind of blatantly manipulating Dalinar in some situations.
But. Yeah, she's a manipulator, that's for sure.
Okay, yeah, Cadsaw, my friend, you've met your end. I knew the jam was sus, even though I was slightly off. The bread was sus. The jam was making it better. Yeah, so that's a thing that happened. I didn't see coming that Shallan would have to give the Soulcaster back to Yasna. That was quite strange. I see why it had to happen. I would be so interested if Yasna was able to Soulcast using the other one, but she was then running around asking for a ruby. So I don't know how that would have gone. But I guess that fallout was... it was sad, given that it just came after she's trying to apologize to Shallan. Bit dark the way everyone thinks it went, and obviously she can't tell everyone that she was able to soulcast something, but she now won't have a soulcaster. But I think we've sort of proven that she didn't need the soulcaster, but maybe she needs the gems. Don't really know what's going to happen there, but that was all interesting. I then wasn't prepared to get Kaladin's, this is how he was branded a slave. We weren't too far off last week. It was just a whole bunch of stuff happening really close together. So it almost felt a little jarring when we went to the interludes. And I was like, I really just want to know more about what's going on with these guys. But, yeah, good chapters that you can definitely feel the pace picking up a little bit, and especially some of these storylines that we've been wanting to sort of come through and keep moving are doing that, which is awesome. Also, now it's kind of, it's anyone's game. What's going to happen? Don't know what's going to happen to Shallan. Sounds like we're not going to know for some time, unless she shows up in someone else's perspective. I don't see how that's going to happen right now, but we've got that possibility. But yeah, we're just going to have to hope that our bridge crew can run away from being a bridge crew.
But I do have to say, Jamie, I think, was she was right about Cabsol. I think she was the first person on the I don't like Cabsol train. So you
it's
even
nice
had
to have that one pay off, Ulrian was annoying, but I was like, she's not actually terrible. But no, Cabsol, fuck you and your jam and bread.
And I really
put that on a shirt. Fuck you and your jam and bread.
Interesting possibility. Okay. I don't remember if it was last episode or the episode before, but you even went so far as to be like, Yasna's smart enough not to eat any of that bread and jam. And I was like, oh my gosh, is she figuring out? I was like, are you saying, is he trying to give her like poison bread and jam? You're like, no, not that. But there's that truth berries in there.
It was so close and yet so far.
You were right on target. You had Cabs all pegged, more or less. So well done.
Yeah. Didn't think he'd die straight away, but
yeah, that's a little bit unexpected, right? It's like, oh, and now he's dead. All right then.
Yeah.
I mean, he deserved it, but whatever.
Yeah.
Although we didn't see him
hoisted
die.
On his own.
That's true. We're just taking her word for it.
It sounds like he's pretty dead. Hoisted on his own poison petard.
It's true. Yeah.
I'm just gonna throw this out there. Yasna found out that he was trying to poison her and had demonstrative proof. Doesn't matter if he survived the poison, he ain't surviving Yasna.
Whoops, I soulcasted his blood into poison. I guess he's dead now.
Yep.
There.
Not just soulcasted his blood away, soulcasted it into poison.
Into acid, you know how it is.
Yeah, his body dissolved. It was crazy. It was like it was like one of those things from the other planet.
That was some serious poison he was using. It made him dissolve. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
It's like he's just lying on the ground in pain. She's approaching him like a horror victim, and she just looks at him and says, I'm turning you into a chemistry set.
Ooh, dramatic. I don't know if they have chemistry sets on Roshar, but still.
Figuratively.
Yeah, yeah. So, yes, we got to give Jamie credit, calling out Capsule. But, yeah, I'm also in agreement with you that it's like, you really hope that for once maybe Kaladin's plan can work out. Maybe they'll train and get away and everything will be hunky-dory. So far, not a great track record for his plans working out like he wants them to, though.
No.
But maybe 100th time is the charm. Who knows?
Yeah. Action-packed chapters. I really like them. yeah, everything about the bread and jam plot just like took me completely by surprise. I'm like, oh, holy shit. Like, I actually had to read the whole thing about why does the jam smell funny a couple of times before I figured out what the hell was even going on. So that was cool. Shallan and Yasna's final talk after Shallan woke up was just heartbreaking, because like, you can see 100% where both sides were coming from. And like, but yeah, no, I just felt really bad for Shallan in that moment. As for that, yeah, Kaladin's was just, you know, we pretty much expected how he got his slave brand. Like, I think Jamie said we weren't too far off, but it was still interesting just to see it go down. Just when he's saying to Amaran, "You're meant to be the good one," and Amaran's like, "Oh fuck!" I'm like, "Yeah, yeah, chew on that, you prick." Yeah, so it was all really interesting stuff. I liked the four chapters. The interludes were just fucking baffling to me. I mean, I know that's like, it's, you know, we're world building and stuff like that, but they just seemed a bit. I didn't really get much of like what's actually going on here out of these. It was just kind of a, you got these two thieves who stand around while someone does something, which, mm-hmm. yeah, that's confusing about who the mistress is. And then you got these other two people experimenting. I'm just like, okay, are these guys trying to cross into Shadesmar? Is like they're talking to the spiritual realm? Is that what they're doing? Who are these people? I think it's just we had less context for who these people were than the last set of interludes even. So, and they were just really short. I'm just like, I don't think I quite got what I needed to out of this. But I'm sure it'll come together in the end at some point. So we'll see. And in the meantime, next chapter, Seth coming back. Yes!
I'll agree with you. These are definitely two of the kind of more oblique interludes that we've had. I mean, we talked about during our second set of interludes, how you were like, oh, these weren't as connected as like the first ones. And so it was a little bit strange. Because like Risen and Axes the Collector were both just like out there in the middle of nowhere doing stuff. But at least those kind of felt like stories in and of themselves. These two, it's like, I agree. It's kind of like, what is happening?
This felt more like halfway through Hamlet, you got half a conversation between Rosencrantz and Guildenstern is dead.
No, yeah. Okay. That, yeah. In the Baxel.
Yep.
But I think, at least in the second one, it feels to me like we're seeing some sort of scientific breakthrough. We just don't understand enough about their science to know it yet.
Yeah. And it's just also like, even with things like Axes the Collector, we had enough context like from that one interlude about who he was and what he was doing. Mm-hmm. I feel like we didn't quite get that with these people. Like we learned who they were and a bit about what they were doing, but I felt like it wasn't quite as fleshed out,
yeah,
I guess, absolutely. as Axes and even Risen.
Yeah, I would agree. It's definitely, there's a lot more left to the imagination there about like what's going on here.
Yeah.
But yeah, and everyone has kind of said, it's like, you guys weren't too terribly far off on what happened to Kaladin in the past, but at the same time, I don't know that anyone thought it was quite the way it went down. Like, it was pretty messed up.
Well, I think we all called that he would get, you know, he'd refuse the blade, and for that he would get turned into a slave as retribution. I think the detail that none of us really expected was the fact that the rest of his crew would be just lined up and executed in front of him. That was a fucking stab. Yeah. I mean, again, yeah. Makes sense because he's always guilty about, I fail everyone. It's like, yeah, your last lot literally got killed in front of you.
So yeah. Do we think at that time, when he was offered the blade again, do you think Amaran would have actually given it to him? Or would he have been like, no, you know, you want it now, but no, it's mine. Like, I guess I'm confused as to what would have happened at that point. Because he's already refused it once. He brings it back. He's like, are you sure you don't want this?
I feel like Amaran probably would have done it because I think he's right. Amaran is one of the better Bright Lords. And yeah. I think Amaran was trying to do it as one last, I actually don't want to kill you. You're a great soldier and you saved my life. You could actually be a great lord if you take up this blade. I think Amaran was trying to give him the out as much as possible because he genuinely didn't want to do it. But
yeah, his battle master or whatever the term was, I don't know, just sounded like he had already been convinced by his battle master to be like, no, you take the blade.
Yeah, so I'm kind of the opposite of Dak. I think what it actually is that, well, there's two possibilities. One is simply because once Kaladin turns it down, he notices that like the guy who came in with Amaran is like
surprised.
Yeah, he didn't believe him. So maybe it's Amaram trying to prove that, no, this actually happened. A dude actually turned down a shard blade. That's one possibility. Okay. What I think is, because Amaram's reason that he gives for needing to kill Kaladin's friends and make Kaladin a slave instead of just taking the blade, he's like, no, you'd change your mind later. You would want it back, and that would cause trouble. I can't have that, so I'm going to have to do this to you and to these people. I have to kill them because they would support your story when you came back and were like, no, I want the blade after all. If Kaladin had said, yes, here, I do want it, then that would justify Amaram to be like, see, he's fickle. He'll change his mind. I have to do this whole thing. The fact that he didn't do it, Amaram doesn't get the justification, but he does his part of it anyway.
It seems like a lot of ceremony to go through to come to the same result.
It's true.
Yeah, I mean, maybe what Data said is correct. Like, he almost went through all of those hoops to get them all in that one room together, and also to prove to that one guy, be like, no, this guy really killed that guy. He really got the blade, and he said he didn't want it.
Yeah.
I don't know. What about you, Jamie? Do you think that Amaram would have let him have it?
No, I don't. But I think he was always going to end up a slave, because he could have said, no, I won that. It's just as easy for them to go, no, you didn't. You're lying. It's one guy's word. I think if Kaladin had sort of changed his mind or put up any sort of fight here, I feel like he possibly would have gone the same way as the rest of his crew. I know, like, Amaran didn't want to kill Kaladin because Kaladin saved his life. I get that, but I just feel like it wouldn't. There's no way Kaladin was going to end up with that blade. It was just, here's a bunch of possibilities we've worked out, and this is how we're going to handle it. But they needed to see what he was going to say or do or lie about or anything before they made up their decision of how it was going to go. I think the guy already had the brand in the fire anyway. So it was always going to go that way. It was just a case of what was going to happen to get there, I guess.
Interesting point, yeah. Okay. I guess let's get into the chapters. We start with chapter 48, as I said last time, is Strawberry. And the epigraph here says, they take away the light wherever they lurk, skin that is burned. Which, that's cheery, all right? And so Shallan is in the hospital, and basically she's on Roshar equivalent of suicide watch, where there's somebody in the room with her that's acting like, you know, they're doing something else, but really they're here to keep an eye on her. She's not allowed to leave, and she's not having a great time. Being in the hospital is not super fun, but she's still got the Soulcaster in the safe pouch, hiding it out. They didn't, when they changed her into hospital clothes or whatever, they just pulled the safe pouch out, gave it right back to her in her new outfits. So she's right. They don't peek in there. She's sketching that place that she went to with the cold sun and the beat ocean. And she's like, what did I went someplace else? And did I speak with like the soul of the goblet? Do goblets have souls? What happened?
We know from sacred history that, things do have like something in the cognitive realm, like Kelsier's backpack wanted to be a backpack or something. And he picked up his fire and stuff like that. So,
yeah, it's absolutely true. He interacted. I'm trying to, in that version, they look like little, actually they're like little balls of mist or something that he like unfolded into the things. Like he kept them in that backpack and then he would like unfold the one that he needed.
Yeah.
So if this is a similar thing, it's a little bit different. There's an ocean of beads, but maybe they're similar at the same time. Yeah.
Yeah, and she just describes them as beads. It could have been more like mist balls. We don't know.
Yeah. She saw the soul of the goblet, and the goblet said, hey, what the fuck?
What are you doing to me?
Actually, the goblet was very accommodating. It's like, yeah, I'll change. Give me what you have.
Yeah, you want me to be blood? I'll be blood. I don't care whose blood it is.
And so she's trying to figure out, what did I do? It's like, I talked to the spirit or the spren, maybe, of the goblet, and I bribed it to transform? Is that how soul casting works?
So I have a question, and you probably can't answer it, but I was going to ask it anyway. Just a general question for everybody, I guess. So, like, is soul casting in this instance, the goblet becomes blood or whatever. Is it somebody's blood? Like, is this really like an equivalent? Is it an equivalent exchange, or is it a transformation like a transportation of one thing to another, like not transmutation, but transportation. Like, is there somebody's blood who's now filled with goblin?
Jesus, that would be Christ. Unfortunate. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I'm like. I don't get what's going on here. I mean, if it's just part of the magic, it's just part of the magic. But like, I want to know like what is actually taking place. Is the DNA and makeup of the goblet turning into blood? And if so, like, what is the determining factor of the amount of blood? And or is it trading places with blood somewhere?
Well, when they've soul cast other stuff, it tends to keep, like, for instance, we found out that they take rich dead light eyes and soul cast them into stone, basically turn the body into a statue of itself. So it's like equivalent size and shape. It's hard to say that with blood, because maybe the blood started out exactly the mass and shape of a goblet, but then it collapsed into a bottle of blood. So that doesn't seem to me like a trade situation if you're trading flesh for a rock. Yeah. But maybe
we're talking about a Star Trek replicator where it takes poop and turns it into other stuff.
I mean, yeah, it could be.
I think that's probably what it is. Because otherwise, every time you turn like a corpse into a statue, like if it was a transference or trade sort of thing, then somewhere out there, a rock becomes body.
A dude, yeah.
Yeah, just like a pound of flesh, like pounds of flesh.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if this is the way that it works, apparently you bribe the spirit to change into something somehow. So that wouldn't involve transportation, I wouldn't think.
It's like, come on, do it. It's like, all right. I mean, yeah, I guess if we're talking about this on an investiture level, I guess what you could say is all investiture, if everything on the planet has investiture in it, like everything, the rocks, the plants, which it seems like this place is very full of life. Like the plants seem to have some kind of like self-preservation instinct, if not identity within themselves. If everything is filled with investiture, I guess like you could say we're all filled with the spirit energy, so we're just going to use this spirit energy to change into something else that also has the same spirit energy, right? So it's basically rewriting itself. Soul casting is the act of rewriting itself using investiture. And if we could say that the light that is inside of the stones is in itself investiture, perhaps we could say that it's like door, where it could be anything, right? Anything within the planet's capability of investiture limitations, it could be anything, just like the door can be used for anything. But it has to be – but then, yeah, there's some kind of sentient spirit involved in it, so that's a little different. I don't know. That's my best stab at it, but I was just curious because I'm like, how does this even work?
And another interesting note to it is that she discovers that the gem that Capsule had given her has now stopped glowing, and she remembers a feeling of light and beauty and a raging storm inside of her. So,
yeah. So they're filled with some kind of high storm. I mean, to me, it's like she used a different power with the same power source as what Kaladin's been using, you know?
That it is similar to what has happened to Kaladin, where weird stuff happens and then the sphere is not glowing anymore. So, yeah, maybe. Maybe they're just batteries. For your crazy,
yeah, like I said, like door.
Like door.
Yeah.
So Taravangian comes in for a visit, and you know he's being as polite as possible, but at the same time he's like, you know, you can't let you leave. We got to make sure that you don't get hurt again. Can't leave until you're better. And we find out a little bit about the hospitals. How we knew that they were paid for by the Palladium. That's why it costs so much to get in. But they don't turn anybody away. Everyone who's sick can come here and be healed. So that's nice.
Yeah, this seems like one of the better places on this planet.
Right? Yeah. You got a light-eyed king who actually appears to care about people who aren't other light eyes. So that's maybe a first. Yeah, maybe Kaladin would get along with Taravangian. He doesn't like most light eyes, but this guy seems okay. So yeah, but she can't leave yet. Mustn't be allowed to have another accident, he says. But she says, okay, can I at least have visitors? And he's like, oh, okay, yeah, that might be a good idea. And so as right after he leaves, Yasna comes in. And she's like, finally, I'm allowed to see you.
This bit actually made everything that followed so much harder. Because like I think This is Yasna. She's like actually trying to be really nice, and she doesn't quite know how, but like you can see the effort and just how much it actually cut her up that Shallan was hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And she's desperate to try and make it better in some way. And like she's still got her like really, you know, snappy sort of manner on, but she's doing it because she cares and she was really worried and like, oh my God, you really do care. And then it just goes to shit. Like it was,
yeah,
that was kind of gutting.
Yeah, it's rough because she's, like, vulnerable with Shallan, and then it's, like, that is immediately paid back with betrayal. Like, it's just not great.
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong. Yasna, like, the first thing that she does is start out, she tries to apologize because she feels like it's her fault. She's pushed Shallan too hard, and she's really not good at apologizing. And Shallan tries to, it's like, hey, you know what? It's just that. To get good at apologizing, you have to make mistakes, and you never make mistakes. So I get it. It's okay. And it turns out that Yasna has been waiting outside the whole time that Shallan's been in here to get permission to come in and see her.
And yeah, it's like I've been waiting outside the door for like 3 days. They wouldn't fucking let me in. Have you done anything else? No. Holy fuck.
But she says her research can be accomplished in a hospital waiting chamber just as easily as in the library. So, you know. And they have what is kind of a sweet little moment, although she's found out through Taravangian that Shallan is planning on leaving. And she's like, in the end, she's like, I'm so sorry. I've overworked you. I may have done the world a disservice and stolen from it one of the great scholars of a rising generation. Which that's a hell of a lot.
Did she find that out through Taravangian or through Capsule?
No, it's she says that I hear you're going home. And she's like, wait, when did you hear that? Well, from Taravangian just now when he finally gave me permission to come in.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
And after this big compliment, she's like, here, I want you to take this. It is. She explains that the devotary of sincerity is one that she actually respects. And one of someone important to her once made a good try at converting her to Voronism. And this is what they used. She gives her it's a devotary that. Always, that feels like there's always more to know and never penalizes someone for asking questions. And so their book is called The Book of Endless Pages. And of course, Shallan has to be like, no, it ends. See, which funny story. This was going to be the title. This is the title that Brandon wanted to call the second book, which is now Words of Radiance, is The Book of Endless Pages.
Presumably because the never ending story was taken.
And he thought it was he thought it was super clever. And it, you know, it's named after this book in world and stuff. And when he took it to, I don't remember if it was his agent or his publisher or who it was, but they were like, this is an enormous book. You cannot call it the Book of Endless Pages. You will be the joke of every review. He's like, ah, fine.
Nah, it's fine. I mean, was he well established by the time he published this? Because if so, I would have been like, forget it. I don't care. I'm going to do it anyway.
Mistborn OT had already completely come out by the time Stormlight came out.
Yeah, I think that's right. Hold on. Because he wrote those like in a row. So
in a row?
this book came out in 2010. Hero of Ages was 2008. So yeah, the whole first Mistborn trilogy has come out, as well as Warbreaker was in between that, was 2009. And so this was Way of Kings was 2010. That. Yeah, and Elantris was first, obviously. So
yeah, this is his sixth book to be released.
Yeah, I guess maybe if you're in your sixth, then you're not, like, getting super popular yet.
But Yasna has a whole thing about how, like, you'll find wise men in any religion, good men in every nation, and you'll find, like, close-minded, stupid people everywhere, too. And it really doesn't matter what they believe. A close-minded person is going to be close-minded regardless of, you know, what they choose to believe. And Shallan's like, wow, he's wrong. Capsule said that you're researching Voidbringers because you want to prove Voronism is false, which Yasna never told you she was researching Voidbringers. She got that information from her like personal papers. I feel like that's a bad thing to not only reveal that you knew this thing that she didn't tell you, but to be like, oh, yeah, and I totally told that guy you don't like about it. But Yasna doesn't seem upset about it. She's just like, yeah, I'm going to devote 4 years of my life to something that stupid. It's idiocy to try to prove a negative. Let them believe what they want. I don't care. And that's when Capsule comes in. And Shallan's like, ah, this fucking guy.
Fuck you and guy. Your bread and jam.
And Capsule's like, ugh, I should have been let in right away.
I should have been. He sounds so pompous. I should have been let in right away.
It's like, after I'm an all, ardent.
I'm an ardent, except he's not, dickhead.
Can I just point out, I love Yasna's little speak of the storm and it begins to bluster. Like, fucking love it.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Did we call that too, right? That he wasn't actually an ardent? That's why he was hiding from, like, Taravangian and the other ardent?
I don't remember, honestly.
Maybe I just thought it.
But no, someone who's binged the podcast in the last 3 weeks will probably be able to tell
Hell
us.
Hell no! Yeah.
But Cabsol brought some jam, so everything's okay.
Yeah, everybody stop what you're doing. The asshole with the jam is here.
And I like Yasna is just like, I would have thought that you'd allow Shallan a respite considering how your attentions drove her to despair. She just like comes at him right in front of Shallan too. Like, you know, it's your fault that she's in here. Fuck you.
Well, I mean, as
after
we've established,
being there to apologize has not.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. But yeah. This is just how Yasna like acts. It's like she's very protective of Shallan at this point. It's like, you fucking asshole. I mean, we should really be glad she didn't just throw hands right there.
It's probably true. And Shallan has to be like, no, it wasn't you, Cabsol. I wasn't ready for all this. And Cabsol's like, you know, here you go. Here's some proper food for you. Strawberry jam. And Shallan's never heard of strawberries. He's like, it's super rare. It can only grow in Shinovar. So, you know, how much money did he spend on this that wasn't his? Of course, if he's not really an ardent, then maybe he doesn't actually have access to ardent funds. So that really was his money. It makes it okay.
Mm. Yeah.
And Yasna, like, takes it and, like, dips her finger in. And she's like, sniffs it. And Capsule's like, oh, I thought you didn't like jam. And she's like, yeah, I don't like jam. I was just curious. I've heard strawberries have a very distinctive scent. And he's like, here, I brought some bread for you also. I understand my attentions were too forward. Thank you for not blaming me, but I thought maybe if I brought you this. And yes, it's like, what? That would absolve you? Sorry I drove you to suicide. Here's some bread. Which, once again, just all out coming for him right in front of Shallan, who maybe you should be a little more sensitive in the situation. But Shallan's like, no, I'll have some, and so will Yasna, because, like, can you please just pretend to get along for 5 minutes?
No.
And so Yasna, you know, eats some bread. Although the way it describes it is weird to me. Yasna grimaced as she put her bread to her mouth and chewed it. But Capsule's like, hey, you got to try some of this jam. They're hard to find. But the jam is really nasty. And like, Shallan's like, I'm not trying this. This smells gross. It smelled like vinegar and slime.
Yeah. In hindsight, like, why does he wait? Is he trying to be polite in waiting for them to have the jam? Like, why didn't he just have some jam?
It's a good question. I mean, he's not waiting for Yasna to have some jam. He knows Yasna doesn't like jam, but
right. But my point is, like, he screwed up by not eating the jam quickly enough.
Yep.
Making himself look super strange in the process and suspicious. Why didn't he just have some bread and then immediately put some jam on it? Because he's like, I like bread and jam.
It's a fair question. And honestly, apparently this stuff smells so bad that, and Yasna's like, oh, is that not how it's supposed to smell? Her reaction is a little subdued given that she was the first one to smell it. And she's like, I guess it's supposed to smell disgusting. Whatever.
Yeah. Like she's never smelled a strawberry. So how would she know what it's supposed to smell like?
It's true.
Oh, that's what she was asking. She's like, you must've got a bad jar. Is this not right?
Well, yeah, I know, like, but I'm just saying, like, it seems weird that, like, Shallan's immediate reaction is like, oh my gosh, this is disgusting. And Yasna's reaction was like, huh. And then, oh, it's not supposed to smell like that? Oh, well.
Well, I mean, she never eats jam at all, so maybe that's she true, thinks, like, yeah. All jams stink like shit.
Like vinegar and
or
slime.
Or she knew what was going on.
Do we think that's the case? Why would she?
I don't think she'd let Shallan go through with this if she knew what was going on.
Yeah, if she knew that's about true. The bread, yeah.
Yeah, like she would just sit back and let Cabsol poison himself and laugh. But the second Shallan like started taking it, she'd be like, no, not about that.
But Cabsol's like, no, it's not supposed to smell like that. And then he just scoops a big glob into his mouth anyway.
He's like, oh, I've got to have the jam. he's like, I was trying to be light, polite and share my stash with you guys. But you guys are taking too long. Give me that jam.
Just hook it to my veins.
Oh, God. Delicious jam. I've been waiting all day for you. I couldn't stop thinking about you all day at work. Oh, jam.
And he's just like, it's not so bad. You should try it.
The tea is like, coming from his eyes. It's like, it's so good.
It's so good.
And then she refuses, and he kind of freaks out and runs out of the room, or tries to run out of the room, before he collapses to the ground, his body sliding a little way across the spotless stone.
Yeah, he realized, like, oh no, there was too much powder in that. I'm gonna die.
And so, then Shallan starts to feel bad, and realizes something is wrong. And then she tries to get up and also falls to the floor. And Yasna's like, she's been poisoned. I need a garnet. Bring me a garnet.
The way you describe that, it's like, yeah, so he starts running away from them and he collapses and falls to the floor. And then Shallan thinks, something's not right.
Yep.
Wait a minute, there's something wrong here. That's not what normally happens. Capsule never runs away and falls over.
Possibly he does a slip and slide across the
yeah. Board. He never does that. What's going on?
He left the jab.
And Yasna is kind of anxious. She's like, I'm going to have to soul cast your blood to purify it. And this is going to be super dangerous because I'm not really good at blood. And Shallan's trying to tell her, you can't. And she's like, no, it's okay. I'll do it. No, you can't soul cast. And then drops or upends her safe pouch and outslides Yasna's soul caster.
So at that point, I'm wondering, like, does Yasna realize that, like, the soul caster she's wearing is a different one? Like, she obviously didn't realize before this when she put it on. And, like, my brain's just thinking, she never needed to soul cast before this. Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, I guess she doesn't soul cast that often. But even so, like, I don't know. I guess we saw her soul cast
for some random purposes. Like, she turned some wine into a crystal to make a paperweight. When she ran out of ink once, she, like, soul cast the letters into fire to write on a paper. Yeah. So she does soul cast randomly for some stuff.
I'm still holding on to that her Fabriel, that both Fabriels work.
Mm. In which case, I mean, she wouldn't necessarily know the one that Shallan had. If they both worked, she wouldn't know that Shallan's was hers originally. Unless, you know, she's got her name written in it or whatever. But she was suspicious from the get-go that someone would try to convince her Shallan to steal her soulcaster. So maybe she just jumps to that conclusion. I don't know. We can look at when we get the last chapter with them. We can examine the discussion a little bit and maybe get something about it. But Shallan feels a warmth burn through her inside her skin as if she'd been dumped into a steaming hot cauldron. She screamed, arching her back, her muscles spasming, and then all went black. Then we get the chapter To Care. And the epigraph says, Radiant of birthplace, the announcer comes to come announce the birthplace of radiance. And the note, presumably still Yasna's notes, is that she's not overly fond of the Ketek poetic form as a means of conveying information. This one is often quoted in reference to Urethiru. Some people mistook the home of the Radiance for their birthplace. So Kaladin has taken his crew down into the chasms because, as you recall, they're on permanent chasm duty now. Woohoo. And no one is super happy down here because this is where chasm fiends come and eat you. And Teft is kind of probing. He's like, have you felt anything strange lately? Maybe weird surges of strength or feeling like you're light. He's like, wait, like I'm what? Lightheaded, you know, because of what happened in the storm, right? But Teft is going for something, but he's fishing, but he's not catching anything here. So now he's going to start training the men. This is where I'm supposed to tell you what a sorry group you are. It's the way training sergeants usually do it, but that's not how we're going to do it. You guys don't need to be beaten down and broken down. You're already as low as you can get, basically. So nowhere to go but up from here. He says that he's going to take he would take 6 weeks to train a new batch of recruits. But if we wait 6 weeks, half of us will be dead. So we're going to have to train a lot faster than that. The first lesson is it's okay to care. And they're like, wait, what? How's that a lesson? And he has to explain that passion is what makes us human. You have to have a reason to fight. It's all right to care about the people, about, you know, your friends, the people around you, helping each other. But don't shut off your emotions to fight. Some people will tell you that's a good way to do it, but Kaladin does not agree.
I like that. A bit different to what we normally see.
Yeah. The second lesson is going to be about standing. So he has to show everybody, you know, the stance to get in, to keep your balance in a fight. And so that's what they're going to start off the first couple of days working on, is how to stand correctly so that you can't be easily thrown off balance.
Yeah. Clearly, Kaladin's never heard that fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering.
I mean, they want to stab people with their weapons, so there should be some suffering if all is going right.
I guess.
He has three of them. Moash and Scar and who's the first one? Drahi come to all try to throw him off balance, and he's just to show, like, that the correct stance is very useful in combat.
What do you think I'm doing? I'm mugging you with that stance?
Oh, Iroh, you're the best.
He is.
And he's like, Teft, split them into pairs by size and weight and run them through an elementary forward spear stance. And Teft says, aye, sir. And then he's like, ah, shit. I just gave away the fact that I've done this before.
Aye, sir. Oh, damn it.
Kaladin totally tricked him. Knew exactly what would happen. Like, now Teft can't pretend that he doesn't know what's happening. On the other hand, we've got Rock, who refuses to fight. We've got Lopin, who has only one arm, which is going to make it tough for him to be a spearman. We've got Dabid, who doesn't talk and has been kind of in shock since the first battle, basically, that where Kaladin started rescuing people. And then we've got Shen, their new parchman. So it's like, okay, I'm not training any of you on the spear. And he does eventually say, like, Lopin, I will train you. You can still do some stuff. But for now, while we're all working on spear stuff, somebody has to actually do the job we're sent down here to do. So with the help of Syl to guide them around, they can find all that stuff they're supposed to bring back out. All the salvage is the word I was looking for, while everyone else works on the spear stuff. And Rock's like, what if we meet a chasm fiend while we're alone? No, I don't think having any number of these guys with you is going to help, just FYI. But
no, it'd just be more eyes for a lookout, I guess.
Kaladin's like, everyone talks about chasm fiends, but I don't think that we've only ever seen scrapes on the walls. Never seen a chasm fiend down here. And Rock's like, yeah, look, it's not just legend. Before you came, half a bridge crew was eaten. And Kaladin's like, well, I'm sorry, but somebody's got to do this stuff, or else if we don't bring up enough stuff, we'll get taken off of chasm duty and just end up cleaning latrines. Can't learn spear while cleaning latrines.
I just want to go back a bit there. The fact that Syl just makes herself visible. And turns out the entire squad knows about her. I'm just like, fucking what? Did I miss that? And then they're just like, oh yeah, no. Like Kaladin talks to himself, and Rock had to tell everyone what was up. I'm like, that felt like a significant thing to just glaze over.
That's true. I mean, Rock's like, no, it's okay. He's not crazy. He's not. There's a spren.
Yeah.
And it was funny that Lopin's like, you didn't say she was so pretty. And Kaladin talks to Rock. He's like, I know you don't want to fight. I've not given up on looking for other ways to get out of here. And Rock's like, yeah, that's not going to happen. We're not going to find another way. You can't climb up out of these chasms. You can't make it to the other side of the shattered plains, not without getting killed by a high storm or some Parshendi. So, but it turns out that a lot of the bridgemen take really fast to the training with the spears. Even the ones, I mean, there's a few that are standouts as being really good, including Dak's favorite, Moash. He's the best.
Red flag.
Spear-wise. Red flag.
Yep.
Okay. But even the ones who aren't standouts, they're better than any group he's trained because they don't complain. They're not asking for breaks. They're not resentful about how hard he's pushing them because they know that this is what's going to keep them from dying, maybe. And a couple people like Moash and Drahi and Scar are so far ahead, they're already doing the resetting exercises where you get pushed out and learn to reset yourself. And Kaladin's like, what makes them so much better? Is it their bridgeman training? Is it their passion? I mean, I think wanting to not have to run bridges and get shot at and die is probably a good motivator, I'm just saying.
Sure.
And I like that he thinks these men cast off by the army, forced to work themselves near to death, were the most fit, training-ready recruits he'd ever had. By seeking to beat them down, Sadeas had prepared them to excel. Take that, Sadeas. Screwing yourself over, I guess. And then... Yeah.
And if we're going back to Dalinar and Adolin for the next part of the book, we're going to be seeing Sadeas again soon.
One would imagine, right?
Yep.
Chapter 50 is Backbreaker Powder. In the epigraph, flame and char, skin so terrible, eyes like pits of blackness. Presumably these are all more of those Voidbringer research that she's been doing. It's the only thing that really makes sense.
Either that or someone is just really, really, really fucking harsh on the Parshendi's appearance.
Oh, you think it's about the Parshendi? I guess they do have some black in their skin, right?
I mean, I don't think it is, but the possibility had occurred to me.
Interesting. I hadn't thought of that, but no, that's fair.
Skin so terrible. Yeah, look, if a crab man came up, I'd probably his appearance would be shocking initially.
Yeah, no, it's true. Especially, I mean, they're used to it because they have the parchment, so I guess they didn't look that unusual to them. But if you hadn't seen someone like that already, that would probably freak you out.
Yeah.
So now Shallan is in a small white room. I guess maybe a different one from before. Not as nice. Yeah, she's been moved to a private room, it says. And there's a soldier guarding her room. And she's like, what happened? I was poisoned. Is Capsule all right? And the guy just ignores her. And she realizes, oh, crap, I gave the soul caster back to Yasna. And eventually Yasna shows up. And she is not happy. Like, she dismisses the guard. And after like, staring at Shallan for a minute, she's like, you were wise to return the soul caster. It saved your life. I saved your life. Who were you working for? Which devotary bribed you to steal the Fabrial? And she's like, none. I stole it on my own. Protecting them does you no good. And she's like, no. The whole reason I became your ward was to steal your soul caster. Yes, but for whom? For me. Is it so hard to believe that I could act for myself? Am I such a miserable failure that the only rational answer is to assume I was duped or manipulated? And Yas is like, you don't get to raise your voice at me. You remember your place after what you've done.
Yep, fair.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. You're not in prison, okay? So we're already probably a step up. Maybe she's kind of in prison. She's in an individual room with a guard on the door, but...
Yeah.
Finally, Yas is like, what were you thinking? My father is dead. So? Well, thanks for the sympathy. Look,
her dad's also dead.
Yeah, it's true. That's a fair point. He made a bunch of enemies, and we're bankrupt.
She pulls out the Iron Man 3 line. Fathers die. No need to be a pussy about it.
Damn.
That's the worst part of that. I'm sorry. I know. On one hand, it did make me laugh, but on the other hand, it's just like, jeez, man, do you have brutal, to be? Yeah. Like that. Yeah. That is one of the. Well, at that point.
We don't know, like, what his relationship with his dad was. Pretty strained.
That's true, but this is a kid. Like, this is one of Tony's, I think, most horrid moments.
I would agree.
Which he Tony's also always had a really bad day.
That's true too.
Yep.
Anyway, moving back to Yasna, who's also mean sometimes.
Who's also had a bad day.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, Shallan has had a bad day too. So nobody's having a great day.
Yeah, but Shallan's had a bad day of her own making besides the poison part.
You're not wrong. Shallan is like, our house was going to fall. We needed something, an edge, a way to earn money quickly, to create money. And Yasna's like, really? You thought your salvation lay in enraging not only in the entire Ardentia, but Alethkar? Do you realize what my brother would have done if he learned of this? Well, the whole point was you weren't going to learn of it. Like, come on.
It's like, my brother, not the most stable of guys. He would have flipped his shit.
And so she's like, no, I guess I understand what you were thinking. It was stupid. And I've arranged a passage for you back to Yakoved. You're going to leave in the morning. Which, Shallan even thinks it's more than she deserved. And I tend to agree. I think that's pretty generous of Yasna to be like, look, you're leaving. I've paid for the ticket. Don't come back. I think that's the best that's more than the best you could have expected from this situation.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, she could go to prison.
Or just be executed. Yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah, pretty generous on Yasna's part. And then she's like, oh, by the way, your friend the Arden is dead. The bread was poisoned, backbreaker powder dusted on the bread to look like flour. I suspect the bread was similarly treated every time he visited, his goal to get me to eat a piece. And Shallan's like, I ate a lot of that bread. It's like, yeah, the jam had the antidote.
So what did Yasna do? Because I checked. The previous chapter said she ate some of the bread. Did she just quaff some of the jam?
This is an excellent question.
In other words, Data is not going to tell us.
Yeah, well, maybe she soul-casted her own blood afterwards. We just didn't get a chance to see.
I feel like that would be excruciatingly painful and dangerous.
One would think, right? And she's like, I started to investigate. No one really remembers where this Cabsol came from. He spoke familiarly of the other Ardents to you and me, but they knew him only vaguely. He was here to spy on me and kill me if he could. He knew this because Shallan was going home, he knew this last time was going to be his last chance. So she thinks he used even more of the poison than ever before. And it didn't work out for him. I'm very disappointed in you, Shallan. I can see now why you tried to end your life. It was the guilt. Which, yes, Yasna still doesn't know everything that was happening, But
yeah, I if I was Shallan at that point, I'd be like, no, that was actually not what happened. I soul cast it by accident. And she'd be like, wait, what?
You're going to have to live with the guilt. You've thrown away a very promising career. No one will take you as a ward now. You threw it away. I hate being wrong. Like, that's the real thing. She's like, man, I was wrong about you. I hate when I'm wrong. And then Yasna goes to leave, and Shallan's like, I have to apologize. I have to say something. Yasna? And the woman did not look back, and the guard did not return. And she just, Capsule's dead. No Fabriel. No studies. She lost everything. And she just sits there crying. No one came to check. No one cared. So that is a very sad place to leave Shallan at the end of part three.
Yeah, who cares?
It is kind of her own fault in a lot of ways, but still. And then we do our final numbered chapter is 51, Sasnan, where we go back to 1 year ago, right after our previous flashback. Kaladin is waiting in the wooden war center of Amaram's camp. Just miserable about all his men being dead. Only 4 of them lived out of 26 men. And people call me lucky. I killed a Shardbearer today, like Lannison the Shorefooted or Evod Markmaker. I killed one, me, and he didn't care. And he does think, I killed a Shardbearer, and then I gave the plate and blade away. The single event had to be the most monumentally stupid thing anyone in any kingdom in any era had ever done.
You skipped Syl's cameo in this chapter.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, there's a Windspren flitting around, so presumably we theorized before that Syl was already hanging around, so yeah.
Yep.
Mm. Yeah, you are pretty dumb, Kaladin. That's our Kaladin, the dumb guy.
I mean, as a Shardbearer, he would have been more important than Roshon. He could have gone back to town and been like, screw you.
This is my town now. Get the fuck out.
Yeah, maybe. But he's still thinking, like, I couldn't do it. Still, just thinking about touching that blade turns my stomach. There's no way. And he's regretting what he did. He went to Amaram's aid. He saved the life of his High Marshal. But he's like, why is that life worth more than my friends? And then as they come in, a couple of words slip out that you guys may recognize. Amaram comes in and says, why Thaidakar would risk this? But who else would it be? The Ghostbloods grow more bold. We'll need to find out who he was. And he's talking to a Storm Warden. And he says he was Vedin, but nobody I recognize. We'll investigate. So here is, the Ghostbloods, obviously, we know about. Do you guys recognize the name Thaidakar?
Thaidakar.
Mm. We've heard it once before, so if you don't recognize it, I don't.
Maybe at the end of Lost Metal, but I don't remember.
No, it is all the way back in, the prologue of this book. So
Where Seth killed the king?
Where Seth kills the king. Yep, so what happens is... Here, let me bring up the scene real quick. Thaidakar.
He's a car. He's like a transformer. Just like Optimus Prime.
So as the king is dying and Seth is standing over him, the king says, you can tell Thaidakar that he's too late. And Seth goes, I don't know who that is. And the king says, the king frowned and he goes, well, then who? Restorese? Sadeus? I never thought... And so, yeah,
you can tell Thaidakar he's too late. Who? Oh, that's disappointing.
At least I could figure out the Flash's secret identity. I have no idea who this is.
I have no idea who this is. That is one of the greatest scenes in that show, I have to say. Like, why did he expect to know who the guy was?
I think it's a reasonable assumption.
This is Bruce Wayne. Oh, no, wait.
Yeah. Luther probably assumes that anyone in the Justice League is probably someone of importance somewhere, so...
Yeah, that's fair. Also, the name Restorese pops up in this chapter, too, but we'll get there in a minute.
Yeah. It'd be the same thing if you found out who Superman was. He'd be like, who's Clark Kent?
Maybe. I feel like he's met Clark Kent.
Lex knows Clark Kent.
Yeah.
But he doesn't know... Clark Kent.
Wait, are we talking about... Is this Wally West or Barry Allen Flash?
This was Wally West. Because it was the Justice League Unlimited, or was it regular Justice League?
Oh, yeah.
They're the same universe, so. Yeah.
I think it was Unlimited. I don't remember.
But yes, so whoever Thaidakar is, Amaram thinks that that's who's trying to kill him. Gavilar thought that was who was trying to kill him. And maybe he's related to the Ghostbloods, because Amaram's like, the Ghostbloods grow more bold. So were the Ghostbloods out to kill King Gavilar as well?
Bum, bum, bum! But why?
But why?
Marijuana. Yeah, hates highborns of all shades.
Why? I mean, he's never been a big fan of nobles. It's true.
Yeah.
And so Amaram comes in with his guys and also the four guys left from Kaladin's squad. Hab, Reesh, Alabet, and Koreb.
And otherwise known as dead men walking.
Yeah. One of Amaram's officers is holding the shard blade on like a white cloth. And like Amaram says, you did a brave thing today, soldier. And Kaladin's like, what should I say to that? I wish I'd left you to die. Thanks.
Fuck you and your bread and jam. Wait.
Wrong time period.
Yep. And Amaram says, why did you do that? Why did you rush into attack a shard bearer? And Kaladin's like, I didn't really think about it. And Amaram knows his name, but does not remember. He's like, yeah, you remember me? I'm from Hearthstone. And he's like, oh, no,
this is a real kick in the dick.
Your cousin Rishon, he sent my brother to the army and then I joined with my brother. And Amaram's like, oh, yeah, I totally think I remember you.
No, he doesn't.
He does not.
Well, especially because Kaladin thought of him just so much higher than all of the other light eyes as well. It's just sad because he's a guy that I've put my life on the line. Most of my team is dead to protect you because I thought you were worth something and you've got no idea who I am. Well, shit.
Yeah.
Poor guy.
Yeah.
Your cousin Rishon is city lord? I have a cousin?
He's like, I gotta be honest with you, I got face blindness, so like, I think I know who you are, but it's a bit of struggle for me my whole life.
Rishon just sucks so hard, I tried to forget everything about him.
Yeah, he is the worst, isn't he? Let's talk about how bad he is. Remember his dope of a son? Glad he's dead.
I think Kaladin's just going, I don't really remember who you are, but also I got a concussion today, so.
Yeah. Also, I broke my leg. I don't know if you were there for that, but my horse fell on me.
Yeah, the horse fell because some rider hates horses and killed him.
Yeah.
Amaram wants to know, why did you reject the shard blade? I have to know. And Kaladin's like, I can't really answer that. He says, look, those are mine. The shards are mine. I gave them to Koreb. He's the highest ranked of my soldiers that's left and the best fighter. And he thinks Koreb will take care of the others once he's the Light Eyes. And then Amaram looks over at his dudes. One of them closes the shutters, and then they pull out their swords and start advancing on the four men who are left of Kaladin's squad. And Kaladin's like, no. And they start killing them. And he's so like, no, awful. This can't be happening. Hab and Alabet pull out their knives. Alabeth's knife thumped as it hit the ground, followed by his arm, and then finally his corpse.
That's a description.
That is a description, yeah. And Koreb...
This is like the world's shittiest game of dominoes.
Koreb, who we've established was the best fighter of the group, also lasts the longest. And he doesn't even seem... He says he doesn't scream. He seems to understand what's happening. And then one of them knocks him down, and then another one cuts his head off, and it's done. And Kaladin's just like, you bastard, you storming bastard. And Amaran goes, I'm sorry. I couldn't risk them telling what they saw.
Sorry doesn't wash out the blood, asshole.
So the story is going to be that Kaladin's squad helped the shard bearer, because people need to think that Amaram killed him. When he shows up with the shards, there can't be a story that Amaram didn't earn them. I'm trained in the sword and am accustomed to plate. It will serve Alethkar best if I bear the shards. You could have just asked me for them. It's like, and when news got around camp that you killed the shard bearer, but I had the shards, no one would believe you gave them up of your own choice. No. And you wouldn't have let me keep them. You would have changed your mind. It took hours to decide, but Restoris is right. This is what must be done. So Gavilar's second candidate for who's trying to kill him is apparently someone that Amaram consulted about this and before making his decision.
I assume that was the Stormwarden in the room here.
That could be. And Kaladin's like, it was all an act. The honorable Bright Lord who cares about his men lies, all of it. And he's like, this is for my men. You can't begin to understand the weights I carry, spearmen. I can't worry about the lives of a few dark-eyed spearmen when thousands of people may be saved by my decision. And then here comes the Stormwarden with the branding iron that he's been heating up. And Amaram says, you saved my life, so I spare yours. Five men telling the same story would have been believed. A single slave will be ignored. The war camps will be told you didn't help your fellows, but you didn't try to stop them either. You fled and were captured. You're discharged as a deserter and branded a slave, but spared death by my mercy.
So there you go. Thanks, buddy.
And then he leaves before they brand Kaladin, and that's the end of the chapter. And the end of part three. So, yeah, that's a hell of a thing.
Do we know at this point in the story, presumably Amaram is still out fighting battles somewhere, not on the Shattered Plains, but elsewhere. Is he still alive?
We don't know. I mean, what Tavlakiv said when Kaladin was in the slave wagon was like, if you escape, you'll go after the first guy who turned you into a slave, Amaram. And when he dies, that'll be my signal to hide. So Tavlakiv seemed to think he was still alive.
Okay.
At that point, at least. We haven't heard anything since then.
So it's safe to assume he's probably still alive and doing shit.
I mean, I guess he's a shard bearer now, so probably even tougher to kill than before.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
And to bring up to Jamie's point from the last time we talked, she was talking about how, you know, if Kaladin killed this shard bearer, the army would be one shard bearer down. But apparently this guy, he was Vedin. He was from Yaakoved. So the army is up a set of shards, although they didn't know who the guy was. And I don't know that we could possibly know. We don't even know many people from Yaakoved. We know Shallan. It wasn't Shallan. We could be pretty confident of that. Now the interludes. We read the first two and leave the Seth one for later. Although the next one we're going to read for next week, the Seth one, is called Death Wears White, which is a pretty metal name for the interlude.
Yeah. Very Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, yeah. So we are with Baxel. So
Baxel, huh?
Baxel is in a lavish palace corridor with a big bulky bag of tools, and he's walking next to Av, and he's kind of freaking out. He's like, shouldn't we be doing this at night? And Av's like, yeah, Mistress knows what she's doing.
Mistress.
So Av and Baxel are Emuli, dark skin and hair, from, I believe the country is Emul. Well, now I gotta go back and look at the map because it's gonna bug me. Map. Sorry.
Yeah, looking at the map.
Yep, Emul. Emul.
It's above Marit.
Just south of Azir, which is where the Azish are from. And we know Azish because I think Sigzil is Azish.
Yeah, south of the Pure Lake.
Yep, south of the Pure
Lake. Pure Lake, eh?
So, yeah, that's where these guys are from, at least. I forget where they are currently.
I'd like to hear the audiobook of just the Pure Lake section, just to see, like, because I just imagine the Pure Lake guys talking like Canadians. Or, like, from very the Midwest. Relaxed. It's just like, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, down here into Pure Lake. We like it down here.
Did you catch any fish, eh?
Yeah, caught lots of fish into Pure Lake. Easy to catch fish, in fact.
Praise be to the god whose name I forget, who doesn't like us.
Yeah.
We can only praise his brother secretly.
Yeah.
So.
See over there? There's the lake moose.
The majestic lake moose. Great eating that.
But you don't want to get it angry, no.
No, no, no. We'd have to call in them possum hunters if we'd get him angry.
Oh, fuck.
How many accents are you guys going through?
Right?
It's messed up to ask.
Yeah.
Wow. and so the mistress is walking ahead of them. Not Emuli. Doesn't even say Makabaki, which we've heard the term Makabaki before, referring to dark-skinned people. I think it's basically an ethnicity instead of like a country of origin. So she's not from Emul. And she's not even Makabaki, which is the ethnicity of like the Emuli and the Takari and the Azish. All these dark skinned people are Makabaki, or at least many of them.
Mm. Yeah. I don't think I'm going to need to save this for predicaments. I think the mistress is Chris.
Oh, interesting. And I'm like, does it describe her hair like that?
Yeah. Jamie, I think you're right. I think I'm right. I think this is Chris.
She has beautiful black hair, which would fit. She has eyes like a shin, but tall and lean like an Alethi. So she has shin eyes are what we would consider. We've talked about that before. More like European sort of eye, style of eyes instead of the without the epicanthic folds. So that would also fit probably. I like it. The mistress had good ears. Strangely good ears.
What does that mean?
Well, they don't dare talk about like what her heritage, because she tends to hear things.
Strangely good ears.
And so they are in the home of Ashno of Sages, one of the richest and holiest men in all of Emul. So like they are in Emul, where these guys are from. He has hundreds of servants, but they're not in this hallway at this particular moment. So that's good.
The mistress is into vandalism, apparently.
She is. They get to a spot and she asks for her tools and she starts destroying pieces of art. The painting, the first one, the painting depicts Ipon, Lady of Dreams, a beautiful masterpiece of gold leaf on black canvas. And the mistress just takes her knife out and slashes it.
Yeah, it's not Ipon anymore.
Yep. And Av is just hanging out, picking his teeth with his fingernail, like relaxing while the mistress does her thing. And here's where we start talking about the old magic, which I brought up slightly too soon in the previous episode. Baxel's like, you know what? I've been thinking about seeking out the old magic. And Av's like, why? I don't know. Seems like a thing to do. They say every man gets one chance. Ask a boon of the Night Watcher. Have you used yours? He's like, nah, I don't want to go all the way to the valley. Besides, my brother came back with two numb hands. Never could feel them again. Which, yeah, that kind of sucks.
The old magic. There's some old magic in that old silk hat.
Yeah, so if you do look back at the map, you can see just east of Emul, there's a mountain range, and then in the middle it says the valley. And so that's where they're talking about there. So you can go there and ask the Night Watcher for a boon. And he's like, oh, well, he came back with numb hands. What was his boon? Yeah, I don't know. He never said. Seemed embarrassed. Probably asked for something silly, like a good haircut.
The world's most comfortable pair of underwear.
I mean, yeah, the Dragon Balls have been used for lots of stupid stuff, so maybe.
Yep.
And he's like, yeah, I was thinking about asking for courage, you know? Yeah, I figure there's better ways than the old magic. You never know what kind of curse you'll end up with.
Who needs courage when you have a gun?
Exactly.
I will need some courage. Courage. You know, R.I.P. Akira Toriyama. You guys mentioned Dragon Ball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true.
And so Av has never gone, but he knows a lot about it because his mother and each of his brothers and his father all went. Most of them regretted their curse. Except for his father, he got a heap of good cloth, sold it to keep us from starving during the Learn-Up famine a few decades ago. What was his curse? He saw the world upside down from then on. But he said he got used to it pretty quickly.
That would just fucking... my mind boggles trying to picture that.
Well, it's funny because it's actually true that you do get used to that pretty quickly. They make some glasses you can wear that like kind of flip stuff so it looks like you're seeing everything upside down. But if you wear them for a little while, then your brain just kind of fixes it.
Okay. Which
it makes a weird kind of sense because when we see stuff, it hits the back of your eye upside down and the brain translates it. So
fix it, yeah.
We're just designed to be okay with that. So I can see how this guy'd be like, it actually wasn't so bad. I saved my family, and you don't even notice it that much after a while. And so, this old magic sounds interesting. There's some creature out there called the Night Watcher handing out boons and curses. And sometimes they're related, sometimes they're not. But you ask a boon, she gives you what she feels you deserve, and then a curse to go along with it. So... you ask for a boon, she doesn't necessarily give you that boon. She gives you what she thinks you deserve, which I feel like is a Russian roulette game I would not want to play.
Yeah. It's like she gives you what you think you deserve and also a curse. You could wind up with two bad things.
Yeah, exactly.
As a result, like, fuck that.
The mistress comes back and she's like, padded mallet, there's a full statue back there. Here you go. And the mistress is like, maybe I should get myself a shard blade. Ah, that'd make this too easy. And Baxel's like, I wouldn't mind if it was too easy, mistress. I think it's a padded mallet so she can smash stuff without it being too loud. And finally, Baxel's like, why does she do this? So this is not like the first time this is happening. This is a regular thing where they go and destroy art or something like that. Maybe they destroy other things sometimes. But these two just go along with it because apparently she pays well. And Baxel's like, yeah, why does she do this? And Av's like, I don't know. Maybe you should ask her. I thought you said I should never do that. Well, it depends on how attached you are to your limbs. Rather attached. Well, if you ever want that to change, start asking the mistress prying questions. Good to know. And then Baxel thinks the old magic. It could change me. I will go looking for it. So I guess good luck, Baxel. Knowing his luck, he wouldn't be able to find it. So yeah, that's a bit of a random interlude. But possibly we got a couple of theories that maybe it's connected to the wider Cosmere and we just don't know it.
Yeah. I mean, what other point is there in having it in there? It makes no sense to us as first-time readers, even with all the extra info we have. So it's like, that's the, if the only nugget I can glean is that that's possibly Chris, I mean, then I'll be satisfied. But otherwise, I'm like, that was a waste of time.
Well, I mean, we learned about the Night Watcher and how that works.
Sure, I guess, if you're into that sort of thing.
I completely missed the hint that this is probably Chris, but now that you've said it, I'm just like, it's fucking so obvious. How did I miss it?
It doesn't say she has, like, the dreadlocks or whatever the Chris does. It just says she has beautiful black hair or whatever, but that doesn't mean that, yeah, it could be.
Yeah, we don't know.
Yeah, we don't know what style her hair was.
Yeah.
And so the next chapter is Geranid, or the next interlude. And we are with two Ardents who are living out in... it tells us where they are. We'll get there in a minute, I guess. They're living someplace, and one of them loves cooking. Although, he starts out with, I think I'm changing my calling. I'm tired of cooking. I don't have the passion for it that I once did. Besides, what good will a cook be in the spiritual realm? And they have a little discussion about the spiritual realm, because you remember, we've been told that you live a good life so that once you die, you can go and help the heralds fight to take back heaven. And so... you're just supposed to do whatever you do well, and then you can do that in the afterlife. And so if he's a really good cook, he goes to help the heralds fight to retake heaven by cooking food. And he's like, yeah, I don't buy that. Like, the body has to be fed. The spirit exists in a different state. Why would it need food? I wonder if they eat in the cognitive realm. Is the food there what it sees itself as being? I'll have to read and see if anyone has ever eaten while visiting Shadesmar. So here we get that, I guess, we talked about Shadesmar briefly not long ago when it came up, and we established that in an earlier book, it said you'd use the perpendicularities to get between Shadesmar and the physical realm. We also know that you go to the cognitive realm to travel. We saw Chris specifically doing that before in Secret History. So cognitive realm, Shadesmar, I guess interchangeable words here. So that's useful information, if nothing else, I suppose.
And also, there are people here native to this planet who know about traveling through it.
Good point. Not only that, there are records of people visiting Shadesmar, and so, yeah. And meanwhile, the other person is examining Flamespren. Geranid studies Spren, and Ashir studies chemistry through cooking. And I like that they help each other because one of them's really good at theory and the other one is really strong at mathematics, so they can help they complement each other well, is what I was trying to find. And she says that she thinks she's made a discovery. The Flamespren are erratic, but I can predict when they will be erratic and when they won't. And he's like, what the hell does that mean? Before I measure them, they dance and vary in size, luminosity, and shape, but when I make a notation, they freeze in their current state. What does that mean? Well, I was hoping you'd be able to tell me. So basically, like, say she measures how big a Flamespren is. It's 5 inches tall. Suddenly, it is always 5 inches tall. It doesn't vary anymore. And if she erases the figure, then it goes back to being variable. And so they do an experiment where she goes in another room and he measures the Flamespren at different times. And so I'm going to read you off 3 measurements. Only write down one of them. It's not until she writes it down that it stops changing size, even from the other room. So it's like the uncertainty principle, where when you measure something, you change it. Although it's way more concrete than that in a way. And they've made some sort of discovery here, but what it means is hard to tell. And that's kind of, I mean, there's a little more back and forth about it, where it's like, you do the math, I'll go and cook you something awesome. But it is a very weird, we never find out all that much about these people, like you, Dak mentioned. And there's not much of a story to this interlude. It's just like a little slice of life for a moment, and then we're done. So those are our chapters. We've got one interlude here, and then parts four and five. And part five is a pretty short part. So we're 71% of the way through the book at this point. Predigments. Where are we going? We've seen an interesting sort of end to Shallan's bit of the story, at least for a while. We know she's not going to be in part four because I told you guys. And then we've seen sort of the beginning of Kaladin's story in a way. So where are we going from here?
So, yeah, I would have to say Kaladin's not even in the next section, is he? Is Kaladin in the next section? Did you tell us?
Oh, yes. Kaladin. Hold on. I'll double check. But yes, it's Dalinar, Kaladin, Adolin, and Navani.
Dalinar, Kaladin, Adolin, and Navani. That is a lot of, like, other side war camp people.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to say that this next part is going to mainly entail what I've been predicting, that Kaladin and his bridge crew are going to somehow catch the attention of Dalinar, Adolin, and that group. And I am hoping that it is a positive thing, not a negative thing. And I think that's really all that I can say at this point. I mean, like I said, I feel like every time I predict something, it either partially comes true, but it doesn't come true in the way that I expected it to. And so even though we're really far into this book, I just don't know what else to say. But that's where I'm going to guess we're going, is has something to do with them getting together and meeting one another. And so I'll go with that.
Okay. I mean, that's fair. We've kind of been looking this whole time, because Kaladin and Dalinar have spent the entire book real close to each other, but never quite. Finally, recently, we got Adolin and Kaladin running into each other, and they exchanged a couple words. But
right.
Other than that, it's just been so close. So if they'd never met up by the end of the book, it would, I feel, it'd be a little bit frustrating.
Yeah, maybe just a little, but also something I could see happening. So.
I mean, yeah, we know there's a lot more books to come, so.
Right. A lot more. Lots more, as Waka would say.
And it's each of them is so big that it's like, there's a lot more book to read. Even if it was just a couple more, there's a lot of book in there.
Yeah. Yeah, are they all generally the same length, or do they get longer as they go?
I think, if I remember correctly, The Way of Kings is the shortest, but not by, like, a whole lot. Let's go by how many episodes, because I've got them all outlined, so I can answer that real quick.
Oh, nice.
In that way. This one is 30 episodes. Words of Radiance will be 32. Oathbringer will be 39. And Rhythm of War is 38. So they're all longer than this one. And yeah. Oathbringer and Rhythm of War are longer than Words of Radiance as well. So lots of book.
You might even say thick book.
Richard, is that you?
Richard, it's been so long. How's it going, man?
Okay, predictions. So I was of the same view we talked about Chris before. Don't need to go back into that. I was reading the interludes and I was like, oh, I've got no idea what is going on here. But I think in the last interlude we read, and they were talking about the cognitive realm, and then having Shallan talking about the goblet that she had, and then does the goblet have a soul, and all that sort of stuff. I was like, what are the chances of those things both coming up at the same time? So I think we've got a link there. However she's using investiture has got to go through that somewhere. I think there's definitely something to explore there with that. Don't know what that looks like yet, but it has to be. I was also thinking too that we've got a link between, you know, Kaladin. They call him Stormblessed, but he's cursed. He's losing all these people, and we've got then other people who are talking about being, you know, receiving a boon and a curse. And I just thought that was probably not a coincidence either. Maybe there's something in the past, not necessarily that Kaladin has requested something, but maybe someone else has requested something for Kaladin, but that person feels that Kaladin had to also bear the curse part of it. I'm not sure. He's got this ability that he doesn't fully understand, but also every time he tries to save people, it's not working. So I don't know. I think that's possibly got somewhere to go. Just trying to really link in these interludes to try and find some commonality between them and the story. Maybe. We'll see what happens there. I think moving forward, yeah, a bit bummed we won't sort of hear from Shallan for a while, but that's okay. We know she's at this stage looking like she's going to be making her way back to Yakaved, so we'll see if that happens or not. She doesn't have a soul caster anymore, so she's going home to get back to exactly where she started, except she's got this additional knowledge, so she's going to have to try and explore more about what she's doing and learn what happened to her. So I hope it's not too long before we get back to her, because I'd really like to know what's happening there. Also, we've got, you know, returning to Dalinar, we also had Kaladin and Adolin, like, met in the last bit that we'd read. I think it was last time or the time before. Maybe I've sort of always been kind of like, Kaladin will seek out Dalinar, or they'll meet through that way. But maybe we're going to have stories now coming up that there's some guy on the bridge crew that was training people to do things differently, which we know is something that they're going to be looking at for their armies as well. But also Adolin's met him and had a run-in with him, which Kaladin then didn't do what he asked him to do. So there could actually be cause for Dalinar or Adolin to seek him out rather than it going the other way. In the, like, Kaladin survived the high storm, so maybe Dalinar will be intrigued by that, knowing his current situation in high storms, would want to speak to this guy that he's heard about. So I don't know, maybe there's something there about how they're going to meet up that way. But, you know, it's a big book, it's a big series of books. We're not at Sanderlanch yet, but there's still a lot that can happen. I mean, just look at how quickly Cadsol could die, so, you know, it could go anywhere at this point.
Take that, Cadsol.
He will not be missed.
No, probably not.
If it turns out he's not actually dead, I'm going to be so pissed.
Cabsol is odium.
Oh. I just
didn't know.
I
like you said about Shallan and wanting to come back to her, because I was the same way the first time I read this book. Like, Shallan's story was actually the most interesting to me, and maybe it's just because I like the studying and research type characters. So when I found out she wasn't going to be in the next part the first time, I'm like, oh, come on, I want to know what happens to Shallan. So, yeah, like, where does she go from here? Does she go back to Yakaved with nothing to show for all this time that they've spent out here? And those ghost blood guys, if that's who they are going to come knocking at the door and want their soul caster back? You think maybe Yasna will at least give her back the broken one so that she can be like, here you guys go. Sorry.
I doubt it. Surely not.
I mean, it was her property. But, yeah, maybe not. But yeah, and then I like the idea. We've been theorizing, like I said with Joe from almost the beginning, how can Kaladin and Dalinar, like, collide? And you're right, we've now been given a potential in that Adolin and Kaladin had an encounter and Kaladin did not fulfill what Adolin wanted, so maybe there's a reason for someone to come looking. That could be interesting. Well, I can't imagine
Adolin. Yes, time will tell.
Yeah. I can't imagine Adolin showing up and be like, give me my money back. You're my slave now.
No, but if you've got this guy that's being a bit of a troublemaker in the camp, you know, Sadius already doesn't like him, and the fact that he survived is no good. He's gonna eventually, people are gonna realize who he is. It's gonna all connect.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, if Sadius has been unable to conveniently kill Kaladin so far, maybe he would take the opportunity to be like, if he has any excuse, be like, yeah, here, he's your slave now in repayment for whatever. Just let him go cause trouble in Dalinar's camp. Why not?
Yeah.
It could be interesting. Of course, then he doesn't take his men with him, and that's sad because we kind of like Rock and Teft and the crew. Except for Dunny. Apparently, Dunny did not win any fans so far. Wait till Dunny saves the day.
Ew.
Actually, funny story. We're reading just while we're talking about it.
I don't like where this is going.
while we're talking, we are reading three chapters for next time. Death Wears White, and then the first two of part four
A Highway to the Sun, and chapter 53 is called Dunny.
Okay, new prediction. He's going to die.
I was going to say, yeah, it doesn't look good for Dunny.
Poor Dunny.
It's like, no, you got a chapter named after you. You're doomed. Sorry, man.
Yep.
But sorry.
Clogged. Yeah, so I agree. I think that I can't picture the details. Kaladin's going to meet up with Adolin and Dalinar somehow more so in this next section. I don't know. My prediction is not for part four. My prediction is part five, because we know we're not going to see Shallan in part four. But yeah, my prediction is that for part five, Shallan's going to go home. She's going to have failed. She comes back with nothing. And so she's going to get home. Her animal killing brother is going to be pissed, possibly try to kill her, because, you know, he's not exactly a stable guy. But I think, yeah, I feel like Shallan's things are going to go worse, better, who can say? Animal killing brother, probably going to be killed himself. I think the ghost bloods are going to come back and be like, you failed, huh? You didn't fix it. In fact, you've actually lost the broken one now. I mean, they didn't know it was broken, did they?
Not unless somebody told them, yeah.
Which they might know. But yeah, I feel like the ghost bloods, probably not Kelsier himself, but like some of his people will show up and probably just massacre the rest of Shallan's family, and they're going to force Shallan to work for it, like pay off the debt somehow, or just, it's like, no, you've got kind of an in with Yasna. You're going to exploit that for us.
I don't think Yasna would like to see her again at this point, but.
No, but also don't think the Ghostbloods are going to care particularly much about that.
True. We now know that Shallan and Amaram have a mutual enemy. Maybe they can be friends somehow.
Maybe. Yeah, so, yeah, I feel like the Ghostbloods are going to come into Shallan's story somehow, and she's going to wind up working for them.
I mean, that would make sense. Clearly, her family owes them something, or at least according to them. So, yep.
So you know, Fat Tony's going to come back and just be like, the time has come for you to repay us.
Yeah, maybe if they're accommodating, they would allow for alternate form of repayment where it's like, okay, you work for us now. So maybe her family doesn't have to die for that.
That might have been it all along. They could have forced them into this position because something that the family had, or the family knows of, or something. Like the Ghostbloods have approached them because they know that like the Devars can do something they need, and so like all along they're trying to force them into a position of giving them that, or getting them that somehow.
And if the Ghostbloods are really like the mafia on Roshar, then they're pretty different from the Ghostbloods that we met on
on
Skadriel.
I've thought about that because thinking back about the little we've seen of the Ghostbloods in this book and what we know of them, I just think to myself, okay, if you put it to Kelsier that for some reason he had to fuck up a whole bunch of shit on Roshar to save Skadriel in some way, Kelsier would not fucking hesitate.
Yeah.
It's like if in some way burning down Roshar involved saving Skadriel, Kelsier would automatically be going for the matches. Like he would not. Right. It doesn't even matter if it's true. As long as he believes that it's true, he 100% will do anything to save his planet, and if it means torching another. So, yeah.
Yeah, Kelsier might be a scary guy from that perspective.
Yeah.
Also, he's not necessarily opposed to organized crime, as that was actually his whole bag at one
that
point.
That was kind of his thing, yeah.
That was his thing.
I was a thief. What's the line from Die Hard? It's like, I am an exceptional thief, and now that I'm moving up to kidnapping, you should be more polite.
Exactly. Oh, Alan Rickman is so good in that movie. Oh my gosh.
All right. Yeah.
Okay. No, these are some.
In fact, you know what? Die Hard era Alan Rickman as Kelsier. Oh, glorious.
Do you know what? Yeah. Yeah, I could see that. He's a.
Ooh. And Jeremy Irons as Marsh. Yeah, I'd do it.
Oh,
absolutely. Oh my gosh. No, that would be amazing.
I mean, Jeremy Irons now as Marsh would be sick.
I think Jeremy Irons as like Inquisitor Marsh, that would be awesome.
Terrifying.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. We don't generally do a lot of casting, but there you go. There's our casting.
Talk about it. I do it all the fucking time.
In just in his brain.
But no, solid ideas, and I think you're on the money with some of your characterization there. We'll see if that translates into correct predicaments as we continue. The ghost bloods have been just peppered in here a little bit at a time in this book, and
yeah. And I suppose we have the advantage because we know who the Ghost Bloods are from Lost Metal, whereas
people reading
Stormlight would have had no clue.
Lost Metal just came out, you know, not long ago, so we have a much bigger advantage going into this book than we did.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was after all four of the currently extant Stormlight books, so no one knew anything from Lost Metal until after all four of the Stormlight books that we've had so far. So
wow.
So I'm going to go out on a limb and assume that's why there was such a debate over whether we should read Lost Metal before reading Stormlight.
Possibly. Yeah, we don't know how much or little a role the Ghost Bloods are going to play overall in these books. They're definitely being hinted at in here, so it could get much bigger.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it also has to do with like some of the people that were kind of tertiarily introduced at the end of the Lost Metal.
That's true, yeah.
Maybe some of them will show up here.
Whose names I can't even remember, so it doesn't matter anyway.
To be fair, there's one that you can imagine at least will probably... Let me bring up the Lost Metal, because there's...
Yeah, remind me, because obviously I can't remember anyway.
There's a quote from the Lost Metal about Roshar, so you can figure that it's likely at least... Hold on, let me search here. Roshar. No, I can spell Roshar.
Are you sure?
Okay, here we go. So there's a... After Kelsier's last meeting with Marisai, where she turns him down, his recruitment pitch down, a Southern Skadrian guy wearing a mask, because that's what the Southern Skadrians wear, right, comes out of the shadows behind him. And Twin Soul, the guy who can use, like, the aether thing.
Crystal Golem power.
Yeah, Golem power.
Cool guy. We'll just call him Cool Guy.
Twin Soul hated being unable to read... To get a full read on the man's expressions, but Delaval, like his sister who ran amok on Roshar, wore a mask that he never removed.
So his sister ran amok on Roshar. Delaval.
So you gotta figure we may run into that guy's sister at some point if we've already been told that she's out there running amok.
Probably.
So some Ghost Blood stuff that we can probably expect, unless it's like we planted that so we could meet this person in book five, maybe, which is also possible.
Yeah. That's possible.
All right, let's move into emails, and we have one new patron. I'll do the emails first, so Joe has time to bring up his list for patrons.
Oh, well, hold on. Let me get my list out.
Yeah, you bring it up. I'll read this first
email. Excuse me while I list this out. Huh.
The first email is from Derek, and it says, "The predicaments continue. First, thank you again for an amazing podcast. Data, you keep your poker face perfectly when the other three come up with their ideas, whether the thoughts are on point or off the rails. Or even when they're both at once. I loved all of your takes on Era 2 and read The Lost Metal along with you for the first time. Wayne.
Nice.
Just got through your Warbreaker coverage, and Dak, after hearing your big theory on episode 154, that was so breathtaking. You've probably got the third heightening. I doubt Dak remembers the big theory from 154, so.
No.
Was that Warbreaker? Or was Warbreaker, that Way of Kings? Okay. All right, gonna have to go back and listen. What did I say?
Yeah, something amazing, apparently.
Listeners, you need to realize we make predictions every week. We cannot keep track of everything we've said.
No, I can barely thread one week to the next. I've been having a real problem lately.
Yeah, I've had people suggest that I keep track, like spreadsheet your predicaments out and see what we can.
That's just like a whole lot of work for you that you don't need.
Yeah, we talked about doing that back in like OT Mistborn. I shudder to think how big that'd be getting now.
Right. Well, and my keyboard's too close to this microphone. You guys can usually hear what I'm typing. If I was typing half the episode, it would really be obnoxious. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you edit it. You could just listen then.
That's true. I could make the notes then. That's a good point. Joe, I've noticed at least two metals that you're not using for the Misting crew. And I know they're not useful by themselves, but we can't forget the gnats. So Derek is suggesting you give somebody aluminum or duralumin gnat powers, which I feel like people wouldn't enjoy that.
We're trying to reward these people.
Yeah, I'm trying to reward them. I don't want to give them something that they have to be in tandem with somebody else to use. That seems not nice.
Yeah. Jamie?
It's like, thanks for your great review. You're aluminum.
It's Jamie, and in parentheses, I remembered the second E this time. You've got some interesting thoughts on Nightblood as of episode 157, and I loved your thoughts on Stormlight before going into it. One last thing for Data. There's so many things I'm looking forward to seeing the others catch in Stormlight. The World Hoppers at the Pure Lake, which we already saw. Then spoiler thing. Plus, I'm sure there's all new cymatic volcano theories because of the cymatics thing. I don't think we really paid all that much attention to the cymatics demonstration. Almost caught up.
Nah.
Just half a year to go. The only downside is having to wait for Mondays when I get through. Still worth it. Keep up the great work. Life before death, wasn't to the time of next. Colo from Derek. P.S. Fash. Thank you, Derek. I'm also looking forward to some of those spoiler things that I couldn't say when they get there. We'll see. We'll see what kind of theories they have, if they can spot certain things. We have one other email. This one's a very short one. It's from Fado, which it says, best fruit. Throwing my hat in the ring for strawberries being the best fruit. Maybe not in large quantity, and others have more utility, but you give me one bite, strawberry all the way. It looks the part, tastes the part, and vibes the part 100%. Cheers from the Discord, Fado.
As long as you know you're not using strawberry jam for an antidote to cover up some crazy poison, then I agree. Yeah, strawberries are good.
It was fate that the episode where we did the strawberry chapter, that email came in.
Yeah, technically not a fruit, I found out.
It's fine.
There's lots of things that technically aren't other things that you think they are that thing.
Yeah, bananas are berries.
Is it?
Yeah. Peanuts or legumes.
Good times.
Yes.
Delicious legumes.
But now I want some strawberries. I'm going to have to check the fridge after this. But those are our emails. I bought, so we could put in the kids' lunches, a big box of strawberries and pineapple. So we may still have some left. But yes, those are our emails. Thank you. If anyone would like to send us an email, the address is thesanderlanch@gmail.com. Now, we have one new patron. Let me move over there. At the Ska level, our new patron is Spencer.
Spencer, thanks, man. You know what, Spencer? You are a wind whisper. You store senses. I think I did that one last time, but that's okay. You could be a wind whisper, too.
Yeah, there you go, Spencer. Enjoy. Store them senses. That's the one that I theorize, like, they figured out a way to store pain as one of the senses when... Somebody told us in one of the, was it Wax's sister who was like, yeah, you can't torture me. We figured out how to like not feel pain. So I think that one
could make sense
if I'm right.
Yeah, that would make sense. At the same time, like, how do you store pain? You inflict pain on yourself and then store it while you're doing that, I guess.
I mean, if pain is being inflicted on you, you store it.
Yeah.
And then like, you've got a metal mine full of pain. You just throw that away.
Yeah, I was about to say, I guess you would just throw it away because who would want it?
Yeah, imagine being like a compounder of that where you have tin for both your metals and you store up some pain and then you can burn it to get super pain. No thanks.
Super pain. Super pain from Final Fantasy X-2? Is that what you're talking about?
Exactly. So you got Pain, Riku, Yuna, Dream Team.
Yeah, they're all right, I guess.
But yes, that was our new patron. We don't have any reviews, so that pretty much does it for us today. I already mentioned the email. If you want to check out our Patreon, I'm still posting my initial reactions as I read through Defiant for the first time, although we're approaching the end of that. And then I'm going to be I may go to that chilled case dough tiny book. But we did find out this week because the new Kickstarter for the Words of Radiance Leatherbound was this week, that there's going to be a new secret project coming. So
I already
am going to say that it's going to be my favorite because it's purple. So
sure. Doesn't like a purple book.
And the little bit of information we were given is that it will be in the future era of the Cosmere and very connected to what else is going on. There were some theories. There've been some theories in the fandom that, it may be like a sixth of the Dusk sequel.
Ooh.
But I feel like I don't know that that's a good candidate for a secret project because that's a project that he said he will do. So I don't know that I buy that.
Yeah.
But anyway, so a lot of fun stuff in the Words of Radiance Kickstarter. He announced that he's going to put out Dragonsteel Prime, which for anyone not familiar with that, he in the Way of Kings Leatherbound Kickstarter, he did the Way of Kings Prime, which is like his first draft or attempt at writing the first Stormlight book. And I've read it now. It is quite different. It's kind of more traditional. You got like the main character who's not called Kaladin, but is similar to Kaladin in a lot of ways at the beginning, like defeats a shard bearer, although he doesn't actually defeat him, but enough so that they're like, oh, you saved the king from the enemy shard bearer and beat him. You get awarded these shards. And it's a more like what you would expect from that kind of story, where it's like, oh, this guy gets the shards and becomes super important, and he has to learn to function in the society and how to, you know, become a noble person and a warrior and all that stuff. So very different from what we just saw, where Kaladin beats the Shardbearer and is like, nah, I don't want that shit. But many of the same characters, even if some of them have different names. Like, Dalinar is in there, Yasna is in there, Shallan is in there, although Shallan's like already Yasna's ward. And there's lots of interesting stuff in that book, but it's just, it was his first shot, and you can tell it's not as well thought through as the eventual published one is. Dragonsteel Prime is, if I recall correctly, it is the book that he wrote as his master's thesis when he got his English degree. And so it is kind of Hoid's origin story-ish. What? Although it's not, once again, it's a lot has changed. It's not canon anymore. A lot of the stuff, a lot of elements from that book have been taken out. Like, that's where the Shattered Plains started, was in that book. Oh. And he eventually took that idea and moved it into Stormlight. And there's several other ideas like that he's kind of cannibalized and moved to other places. So until this Kickstarter, the only way to read that book was, there's a copy of it at Brigham Young University in their library that you can check out, because it was the thesis that he wrote when he went to school there. The problem is that for most people, like, you have to go there to check it out, and the wait list is extremely long. It's like a 2-year wait list or something ridiculous. So not many people have read that. And it's coming out. He's going to start publishing these things as what he calls Sanderson Curiosities. Like, these are books I wrote that were not good enough, but if you're interested, you know, read them. And so we'll get to read, finally, the public will get to read Dragonsteel. And eventually he plans on writing Dragonsteel as either a trilogy or maybe a standalone. He's not sure at this point. Some number of books. Originally, it was going to be like 5 books, but he said that he's moved so much around that there's not really enough there for 5 books anymore, so probably less. But it'll be kind of the origin story of Hoid, and potentially of the group of people who got together to kill God, essentially. So those are books that will come out at some point. I don't know how much, and like I said, not many people know how much of what we now know will be in that book was in this original one. But we'll find out after I back the Kickstarter at the level where I will get that, and I'm excited to read it. So it should still be open. It's not actually Kickstarter. I've been saying Kickstarter. It's on BackerKit only. He decided to kind of bypass Kickstarter for this one. And it was so popular that it crashed BackerKit for an hour when it was supposed to open. And it was we were sitting here refreshing furiously trying to get in and get our pledges.
Yep. I got mine. I just did the secret project. But then I added Dragonsteel Prime. Obviously, you know, I assume maybe we'll read it tertiarily, even if it's not canon, at some point when we run out of stuff to read.
Yeah, we may. Or it might even be, I haven't decided yet. I thought about doing The Way of Kings Prime as something I would read for the Patreon. When I ran out of other stuff. Yeah. But then I went on this 2-week cruise and I wanted to read something, and I read that. So that didn't happen. I don't know if we'll, but I was thinking that it might be interesting to let one or more of you guys, after I've read it and make sure that there's nothing too horribly spoilery in there, one of you guys could read it for the Patreon and record yourselves reacting if you wanted to, just to mix it up. Ooh. So they're not always having to listen to me. But that's just one of the possibilities I'm kicking around about it now. I'll have to, obviously I need to see if that's a good idea first. So yeah, that should still be up when this episode goes out, because it's going to be up for 24 days or so. So if you have not gone, you know, and you're interested in some of this stuff, check out the Words of Radiance BackerKit campaign.
And don't be afraid by, like, the levels. So, for example, I was like, oh, well, I don't want to pay for the Leatherbounds, but there wasn't a platform that had – there wasn't, like, a version of the pledge that you could pledge that was on the main page that said – Secret Project and Dragonsteel Prime, but once I clicked on just the Secret Project, it said, do you want to add Dragonsteel Prime for this much more? And
it has many add-ons.
Yeah, so like you can I kind of like the fact that you can kind of mix and match things a little bit on that backer kit thing. So, you know, when you see the big prices for the live bounty, you're like, well, I want this, but I don't want this. Like, kind of play around with it, because you may actually be able to get what you want, you know, without having to get stuff you don't want.
Yep. I got I did get the signed Leatherbound. I started out with the numbered one, and then I decreased my pledge because that was just too much money to spend. So I just got a signed one. But also got some pins, and I'm thinking about adding one of the plushies that it had, which, Joe, if you haven't looked at, you shouldn't look at those very closely, because there might be some spoilers in there.
No, I tried to just look at stuff that I wanted, and I was like, okay, I'm going to move on to the rest of this.
There's plushies of various Spren that are very cute, and I'm thinking about maybe getting one of those. But it's all like mock-ups now. You don't actually see a real example of one, and I don't want to get one until I know what they actually look like. So
yeah, that's true. You don't want to think and maybe be like, oh, this sucks.
Maybe I'm thinking maybe they'll be at the con this year, and then I can just like actually hold one and see like, do I want to? Because they're not cheap. They're like $40 for one of these little plushes. So that's not. I'm not going to go out and buy a bunch of those if I'm not sure they'll be cool.
Yeah.
But yeah. So check that out.
I just put us down for the Secret Project, because I figure between the exchange rate and shipping costs, that'll be expensive enough.
Oh, yeah.
I would imagine. Yeah. So, yes, we've all been that's been a fun thing happening this week. The Sanderson fandom has been all abuzz about that. So, like I said, for next time, we're doing three more chapters. That's Interlude 9 and then Chapters 52 and 53. Maybe Dunny will die is what we've decided now. So putting that predicament out there right up front.
This chapter. Dunny gets clogged.
Oh, no.
Clogged?
No.
Oh, no. I get it.
thank you, everyone, for listening. Check out our Discord if you want. There's a link on our website, www.thesandralhanch.com. Find us on Instagram and X. And I already talked about the Patreon. I already talked about the email address. You guys know that.
Can I do a quick plug?
And yeah, sure. Go ahead.
So, guys, I'm in the middle of Final Fantasy. You guys know I'm a Final Fantasy fans, right? Everybody out there. I'm in the middle of Final Fantasy VII Rebirth right now, and it's an amazing game. I'm having so much fun. But that being said, I am streaming it live on Twitch, and I also am releasing videos to my YouTube channel. The name on both is the same. It's called Joe Show Play, no spaces. So Joeshowply. If you guys have never seen me and you want to know what I look like, I am using a face cam, so you can see my ugly mug.
I don't want to know.
And yeah, you don't want to know. It's yeah. But yeah, I'm on Twitch. I'm on YouTube. I think if you go to YouTube, you have to put 8135 after Joe Show Play, because I don't have a lot of followers or viewers. So like, you have to put that extra number in, or it's really difficult to find my channel. And so, you know, if you guys are interested in Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, or if you just want to hear me, or if you want to join me on Twitch live and chat with me, as long as you guys aren't, you know, throwing spoiler stuff as for Sanderlanch stuff, you know, that's
Dunny dies. Spoiler.
Yeah, I'd love to chat with you guys. Love to hang out. So you can come check it out. Rebirth is going to be like a 100-hour plus game, so I'm going to be playing it for a long time. So even though this doesn't come out for a while, more than likely I'm still going to be on Twitch playing it. I play some different stuff on Twitch though, so like it's not going to be Rebirth forever if you're not into that. But come check it out.
Yeah, I want to start playing that.
It's a great game. It's probably the best game I've played in at least a decade.
Wow, that's some high praise. Well, I can't watch you because I want to play the game and I don't want
to. Yeah, spoiled, don't so. Watch. Yeah. You got to experience it for yourself. Like, there's going to be moments where you're like, I can't believe they did this.
While we're on the topic, Jamie, Dak, anything you want to plug?
Well, no. since you guys brought it up, I've mentioned in the past that I'm a part of the X-Men, the audio drama that you can find on most places podcasts are out. And I haven't really brought this up, but a while ago I approached the chap in charge, and because he manages a whole heap of podcasts under this banner. He does a Power Rangers one, there's a Batman one, and there's an original one he's doing. And I was like, you got a lot going on. Like, I don't know much about those other things, but as far as X-Men goes, I've written stuff before. Do you want me to help like with some of the writing? And he's gone, if you want, sure. So he just straight up offered me the next two episodes that are coming out. I wrote the scripts for. So they are based on the Mutant Massacre storyline. So, yeah, I don't know when they're going to drop, but they're in production. Like, I got the scripts off to him. He sent them out to the actors and everyone's recording their lines and sending them in. So, yeah, like sometime in the next little while, two episodes that I wrote are coming out. So that's kind of cool.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Congrats.
Thanks.
Music by Miracle of Sound, three chapters for next time, and Wuzzing to the Time of Next. Colo, P.S. Fasher. Crabs ahoy! Ghost of the Fallen, the wind is ever guiding, vengeance are calling, a specter in the night. Ghost of the Fallen, golden wings are gliding, feed in the soil so the world can return to life.
Lot of leads in your descriptions there.
It didn't work out. Their relationships, you know, they broke up, all of them.
For various reasons.
Yeah, for various reasons, exactly.
Yeah.
One might say Capsule and Shallan's relationship had soured somewhat.
Zing. Okay.
Waka waka.
That's going at the end of the song.